Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. It is important to listen to Dhamma talks. It's important to study the Dhamma. It's important to keep that Dhamma in mind. The last couple of weeks my talks were on using anatta-sanya or using marana-sati as an aid to one's practice of meditation. Because using those skillful means, those ways of looking at Dhamma, means that you are putting the mind in a direction of letting go, abandoning, renouncing. And by putting your mind in that direction, which is fueled by the understanding of the Dhamma of the Buddha, it does really help get you into more peaceful states. I've made a great emphasis on this range retreat of making sure that the doer is not actually what takes you to nirvana. In fact, the more you try and control things, usually the more problem you experience in your meditation and in your life. And in this particular monastery, we try and do that letting go, but it has to be a letting go in the way of Dhamma. Because sometimes people misunderstand what letting go is, and you know the results, or you know what letting go is by the results. If it leads to peace, to calm, to stillness, you have let go of something. If it leads to problems, the emotions get very intensely negative, then you know you haven't done letting go, there's been some attaching going on there. Some underlying doing which you haven't been aware of. So we use this Dhamma to help us. And so that in this monastery I encourage people to study a few suttas, to keep in mind that Dhamma, because that does both inspire and direct the mind. It is that which conditions the mind to let go. And sometimes that's the case, you hear a very good Dhamma talk, or you read an important sutta and something clicks and that Dhamma stays in your mind. When that Dhamma stays in your mind, it does its work. Instead of the controller doing the work, which just leads to more suffering, the Dhamma does the work. And the Dhamma sort of motivates you, presses the buttons, so that you can let go and be at peace. It's a way of Dhamma knowledge, or insight, wisdom, leading to samadhi, or peace, or calm. And in particular, I mentioned at the very beginning here, because one of the monks asked me to give a talk on the Bojangas, the enlightenment factors, this evening. And that actually is the start of those enlightenment factors, because the first factor of mindfulness is not just being alert to what's going on. That mindfulness also carries the implication, that's very clearly in the Bojanga Sutta, I just checked up before I came here just to make sure, that carries also the meaning of remembering the instructions. Understanding the Dhamma, keeping that Dhamma which you've understood in mind as you meditate. But if we keep that Dhamma in mind, that is an important aspect of mindfulness. The memory of what you've learned. So when you are meditating, when you're eating, when you're sleeping, whatever you're doing during the day, you keep the Dhamma in mind. And that's sometimes what it means by even sleeping mindfully. Or eating mindfully. Or, just doing your chores mindfully. Or going to the toilet mindfully. You keep the Dhamma in mind. And that's why we do have these mindfulnesses of like marana-sati, mindfulness on death, or the anatta-sanya, which is keeping the perception of non-self in your mind as you practice, or dukkha-sanya, of like the suffering of the First Noble Truth. And what to expect. The outside world, the objects of the senses are going to be suffering from time to time. The two thorns which we have, the physical thorn and the mental thorn. The physical thorn, you can't do anything about. You're born in a body, it's going to suffer, it's going away. But the mental thorn, that's something we can do something about. We take out that mental thorn by letting go, by stopping controlling those five senses. As it said in that sutta we just chanted, the Adita sermon, the fire sermon, that those senses are on fire. So why do we play with fire? Why do we play with the five senses in particular when we know they're on fire? At least we can just leave them alone. They can burn out if they want to, but they're not mine. I'm having nothing to do with them. So that way we keep that Dhamma in mind. When you keep that Dhamma in mind, that's one of the important meanings of the very first of the Bojangas, the Sati. So you're keeping the teachings of the Buddha clearly in mind, and that's why it's an enlightenment factor. Very easy to, every now and again, you know, to remember the Four Noble Truths, non-self, no death, this isn't mine. At that point you have that mindfulness there, but you forget too easily. And when we forget, we do the wrong things. When we're doing the wrong things, our meditation doesn't go well, we don't sleep well, we don't eat properly. Everything tends to go wrong because it's not coming from Dhamma. You forget the teachings. If you could only forget the teachings, that food is just food, that's all it is. And the taste is just taste. This is what food does. It tastes like that in the mouth. Sometimes nice, sometimes not so nice. It's impermanent. Not me, not mine. If you try and make the food unpleasant. Remember, that's, you know, what many monks like myself did in the early years. Even though the food was unpleasant enough in those days, still you'd sort of put it all in one bowl and stir it up to try and make it even more unpleasant. I was doing that for many, many days until the stirred up food just became pleasant again. I realized you can't do anything about this. No matter how untasty you want to make your food, eventually you get used to it and it does become tasty. So, you know, it's amazing that you, that food which you used to eat in those early days, you got to like it. So all those, you know, tales I say about boiled frogs and stuff like that, actually if you get have it long enough, it becomes like a delicacy and you like the stuff. So I'm a bit of a hypocrite really, just making out it was untasty. You actually got to like it. But this is just the nature of taste. If you can only keep that Dhamma in the mind when you're eating, just taste is taste, that's all it is. So the mind doesn't go around playing with it. Feelings are just feelings. Sometimes you've got energy, sometimes you haven't got energy. Sometimes you feel inspired, sometimes you don't feel inspired. It's just the ups and downs of the five khandhas. What do you expect? The problem is that when we forget the Dhamma, we have no mindfulness in the sense we forget these teachings. And we think there's something wrong with me. I'm not meditating hard enough, I'm indulging too much, it's my fault. And then we go and get into these terrible states of frustration, depression. Or sometimes things go well. Think, aha, now I can do it. Now I'm really getting into my meditation, now I'm a real monk, not like those other monks in this monastery. Whatever it is, you've lost the plot again. Or you get into some deep meditations, you get a nimitta coming up at last. And what do most people do when they first see a nimitta? Go and grab it as if they own it. It's just nimitta coming up, that's all. It's nothing to do with you. Just leave it alone. But we forget the Dhamma. And because we forget that Dhamma of letting go, the third noble truth, the Dhamma of anatta, anicca, anicca, dukkha, the Dhamma of emptiness, all these other great Dhammas which the Buddha taught, that's why the thing doesn't work. So part of our practice is to keep those Dhammas in mind. To keep the teachings, which are very clearly propounded by the Buddha, clearly in mind. That which you know is Buddhism, you know is the path. All the stuff on the edge, which, you know, we maybe discuss about, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true, maybe that's the right interpretation, not the right interpretation. That stuff you can put aside for a while, that's just play stuff. But the Dhamma which we all agree upon, the Dhamma which is obviously the teaching of the Buddha, there are things like Four Noble Truths, there are things like the Eightfold Path, things like Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. Those ones, keep those in mind. Things like letting go, non-craving. Keep those ones in mind. Things like the death of this body. Keep that in mind. When we keep that in mind, you'll find the meditation goes so easily. The day goes so easily. Sleeping goes so easily. This life in the monastery just becomes so easy. As I mentioned to those in the Anagarika meeting the other day, that beautiful quote that said, this path is a path without groaning. If you're groaning on this path, you've missed the path. It's not the path. All that groaning, you know, this other trouble, it's not the path, it's you cause that. You've missed the point. You forgot the Dhamma. In the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the Venerable Ananda sort of was crying when the Buddha was dying. He said at the time that he'd lost the Dhamma, the Dhamma was not clear to him. He basically, this is what I mean by losing your mindfulness. Not recollecting anymore what the Dhamma is and what you're supposed to be doing. So if ever you get into a problem in meditation, it's not working, it means you've lost your mindfulness. Not the sense of the awareness of what's happening in the moment, but how it all fits together in this beautiful explanation of the Buddha of the meaning of life, the Dhamma. You're looking at it not from a Dhamma perspective, but from the perspective of a Mara, from a perspective of the defilements. You're seeing it in the wrong way. So as we cultivate that right view, the very simple right view which we all know is the heart of all Buddhist traditions, then we can keep that clearly in our mind when we're meditating. When you keep it clearly in the mind when you're meditating, you'll find that it will overcome so many obstacles as you're meditating. In particular, it will overcome the obstacle of controlling. And as it overcomes that, as you keep those dhammas in mind, obviously the second of those bojangas will also be right there with you. You know, there's the investigation of those dhamma states. What's going on and why? And how does this fit into the teachings of the Buddha? And this again is where that things open up. This is like the insight practice which leads to deep meditation. Whenever you come across a problem in meditation, you don't just try control and brute force. Nor do you just try persistence, because you can persist and persist and persist for years and years and years and waste a lot of time. So instead of just doing persistence or brute force or control and thinking, here I am, I'm going to get through this, you stop. You use that mindfulness and the investigation of dhammas to see what exactly is going on and how does this fit into my understanding of the Dhamma. There you'll find exactly what's going on. And this is a beautiful way of practicing, because that, remembering the teachings, investigating what's going on, that gives rise to the way of overcoming unwholesome states, making sure those unwholesome states don't sort of come again in the future. This is the way to create wholesome states and maintain them. This is what's called the right effort, the energies of the mind. I've been mentioned in a talk last year or the year before that this virya business, it comes from one of the words vira, which means like this hero. But the main hero was the Buddha. So it's like the Buddha's energy, the wisdom energy, the understanding of how we overcome these unwholesome states in the mind. It's very easy to say, yeah, we should overcome those unwholesome states, but how do we do that? And he gives the clue there with like mindfulness and investigation of Dhamma. That's what we should do. Not just see unwholesome states, right, let's get rid of that. And one of the famous talks which I remember from Ajahn Mahabodhi, it's actually surprisingly, I was only stayed with Ajahn Mahabodhi for a week, but on one occasion, always happened, that when there was a reason for a talk, he'd send the monks around to all of a couple of senior monks around to all the monks staying there, and we'd call us to a meeting. So we would not have a talk on particular nights. Just when he thought it was a good time to give a talk, he'd just give one. So we all assembled in the sala to hear this talk. And I read this in one of the books, I forget which book it is now, of Ajahn Mahabodhi. It was the story of when he was had fever, and when instead of actually just resting, he came out to do some sweeping in true Ajahn Mahabodhi style. And Ajahn Man just blasted him for that. He said that, you know, you're just a boxer, you always were a boxer. And instead of actually investigating that, you're just trying to overcome it through brute force. He said, that's not the way of a Buddha. And that's the way of the Hindu yogis, he said. And I remember that sutta, because he said it in English, in Thai, and I was perfectly fluent in Thai, knew every, he understood it absolutely perfectly, but then he got Ajahn Panya to translate it, from basically for my behalf. But I already knew what the talk was, because I was actually quite critical of the translation, because it wasn't really sharp enough. But I remember that talk, and you understand that this control of business, trying to force your way through it, is not the way of Buddhism. It's not the way of the Dhamma. The energy, or this virya business, does not come from your will. It comes from this combination of mindfulness and investigating Dhammas. By mindfulness is remembering the Dhammas and then investigating it. There you get the ability to overcome unwholesome states, the ability to grow that which is conducive to the path. So it's what I've always been saying, this wisdom power rather than willpower. So when you have any problems in your monastic life, and you have any problems in the meditation, be careful of using just too much will, because you can see that that's coming from the sense of self more times than not. It's like me against the defilements. And of course, when you have me against the defilements, it's really the defilements supporting the defilements. You never win that way. It has to be this Dhamma against the defilements. So you remember the teachings of the Buddha. You've got to obviously learn them first of all. That's why we do all these talks, why we do all these Dhamma classes, where you encourage the reading of suttas. So you have a good understanding of what this Dhamma is. The basic Dhamma. You don't need to go to two greater degrees of intricacy and go into the Abhidhamma and just read every sutta, learn it by heart. You just need to read a few of those things to get the message. Because that message is repeated again and again and again. And once you have that message, keep it in mind of what's really going on. You keep in the mind of the fact you're going to die, you haven't got much time left. Then of course, energy comes. You don't want to waste time. It's not coming from a sense of self wanting to achieve something. It's coming from just this Dhamma of the impermanence of this time. The rains retreat, it's already almost halfway through. It just goes so quickly. And that idea of this body, many of you are also more than halfway through your life, probably most of you. So, you haven't got that much time left. So that gives you that sense of urgency. But it's coming from Dhamma, not coming from the sense of self. And when you keep reflecting on that, you work with that, the Dhamma Vicaya, the second, it's bound to give this energy coming up. This energy which is able just to overcome the unwholesome states and get good ones coming up. When you start to reflect on anatta, this is not me, not mine, not a self. It overcomes the unwholesome states. The anatta knife is just so sharp, it can cut through so much. And you know it's cutting through because it should lead to the next couple of bojangas. The piti and pasadi, which is the bliss, the happiness and the tranquility. Whenever you actually have wisdom in your meditation and you apply it as the proper wisdom, then the unwholesome states disappear. And that's the job of virya. You see energy coming from the hero. And the hero is the Buddha. It's the Buddha's energy, not yours. And when that happens, you get this. I've done this many, many times. You're sitting there meditating, and sometimes you get stuck somewhere. And I stop. I don't keep on pushing. I just actually stop and look, what's happening? Why is the meditation not going further? You investigate, and you investigate with the framework of the Dhamma. And very often you see, it's not the third noble truth. I'm doing second noble truth meditation, wanting something. Straight away, that insight, that knowledge of what's going on. It happens so many times, as soon as you see the problem there, the unwholesome state just fades away almost immediately. And then you get this beautiful piti, the bliss coming up, and the peace. And that's lovely to experience as part of the path of meditation. To experience piti, to experience pasadi, this tranquility. Everything gets so still. You know what it's like sometimes, you're sitting there and you're restless because the body is stiff. Why is it stiff there? Very often you see that's because there's no joy in there. And you know, you're trying to escape from this. And obviously if you remember the Dhamma, just keep still, just bear with it for a while, and it will just, mindfulness will, the energy of the knower will start to increase, and then you get the joy just coming from the energy going into the right place. Your understanding of Dhamma, your memory of Dhamma knows that all this controlling, that takes away the energy. That's what makes you tired. The more you relax, the more you make peace with every moment, just the energies come up, and the body then starts to feel light, and that happiness comes into the mind. And that's an insight, that's Dhamma, which works. So understanding that amount and keeping that in mind, you'll find that that is enough to create the virya, the energy, which removes unwholesome states and creates the beautiful states, which leads to pity. And the pity is this joy which comes up. The factor of joy and happiness in this path is just so important. It's not emphasized in some monasteries, and people think that this path you should be grim and determined and fighting and going through pain and experiencing pain. If you're not experiencing pain, you're not a real practitioner. But the path which the Buddha taught, which you can read in the suttas, is just such a happy path. It's a path where this pity, this joy comes up. And you get so much fun out of living monastic life. Even like being a teacher with all this work, you just get so much fun out of this. Piti comes up again and again and again and again. So you're sitting there in your hut and just you get blissed out. Even when you're working, let alone when I start a retreat in a couple of weeks' time. And where does that piti come from? Piti is this joy of the mind. This inspiration, this happiness. It comes from just abandoning unwholesome states. Piti is a wholesome state. It's kusala. So when these things come up, never be afraid of them. Never think, oh, I'm enjoying myself, there must be something wrong. Never think you don't deserve pity. Get yourself out of this and just allow the process to happen. Keep that mindfulness of remembering the teachings firmly in mind. And when you keep that mindfulness, remembering the teaching firmly in mind, it's so easy. Yeah, this is actually how it happens. This is what is supposed to occur. You get joy. That teaching which I've given, that the more you stay still, the more happiness arises, is a powerful teaching. So if you've got a stiff body or the mind is a bit dull, don't do anything. Just keep the mindfulness strong. Investigate that. What is dullness anyway or whatever? But don't do anything. Don't try and get rid of it. If you try and get rid of it, if you do things with it, if you try and control it, you're making yourself out of this, you're attaching to that. This is what it is. It's a problem for you. I don't want to be this tired or this dull. You'll find the dullness will keep on going for a long, 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 long time. Because you're adding just more unwholesome dhammas, more akusala things onto what was already akusala. It's all karma, so leave it alone. And instead, just you make peace with every moment. This is not me, not mine. It's dukkha. What do you expect out of life? It is anicca. It will pass away by itself. It's emptiness. This emptiness of non-measuring. You know, just of all this measuring business. It's a nice meditation and not a nice meditation. As taught before, that from measuring you get controlling. So you stop measuring and you can't control anymore. It's another way of letting go, by giving up measuring. And when you can do this, just the dullness disappears. Many times I've sat with a tired body or an aching body and thinking, oh, how on earth am I going to get into meditation like this? It's just my body's stiff, I'm tired, I'm aching. I just sit there and wait. And of course, because you don't do anything, because I know just how to be patient and just allow the energies to flow into the right place rather than waste them in controlling. It just doesn't take that long, and the body feels bright and it's at ease. and the mind gets inspired. Pity starts coming up. And it's a natural result. Once you know how to create that pity, that joy in the practice, by letting go. Joy at last, to know there's no happiness in the world. That's where the joy comes from. When you stop trying to control that happiness. Because not happiness is not in the world. It's when you abandon the world and abandon that worldly happiness, and that's where you get the joy. So when you abandon things, joy comes up. It's the joy of abandoning. Nekama sukha. The pity which is there as well. And that joy of the mind, you can indulge in as much as you like, because it comes from unwholesome state. So it comes from wholesome states. The joy of peace. The pity and prasada usually come together. When you're tranquil, you get pity. And that's why that ever since I was young, I always liked this idea of the hermit. The person who just, because maybe I read many Western books about the Christian hermits, who lives in this forest or in this mountain or in this little cave, who's just sitting there just completely content in their simplicity. And it's marvellous to actually to know that now you are that hermit. That little hermit which you sort of fantasized about, romanticized about as a young boy. Now you are a hermit. Someone who can just stay in their hut, completely happy, doesn't need a television or radio, doesn't even need books, doesn't need anything. You just live this beautiful, simple life. Few possessions, if money comes, if it doesn't come, don't care. That's a beautiful way of getting this tranquility of your lifestyle. And many of you almost, if you haven't got that already, you know, Jiva Prasadi, the tranquility of your lifestyle. Ajiva Prasadi, sorry. And this is like the tranquility of your lifestyle. Like a little hermit doesn't want for anything in the world. And it's marvellous when you can have that degree of contentment. The contentment of the material world. You have more than enough. You're so happy just in your hut, just sitting there with your things, meditating or going for a walk, doing very little. You're someone who wants little. And that degree of contentment is a great sense of joy. So this is why I say that the joy and contentment, the joy and prasada, the joy and tranquility, sorry, they go together so easily. And that sort of tranquility is not just tranquility of lifestyle, but it gets to the tranquility of the body as well. Your body may not be the best. It might be an old bomb of the body. It might have this ache and that pain. But we can actually be tranquil with that. We can allow it to be. And I know this from personal experience, because I've been in, got these great meditations when I've been in hospital with a fever, just so weak and in pain. It's still possible, because I've proved that from my own experience. And if you know how to let go, if you follow those initial bojangas, keeping the Dhamma in mind, this is not my body, suffering is part of life, pain, but I can take the mental arrow, I'll take the mental arrow away, just allow it to be, just don't try and do anything with it, just make peace with the body, make peace with the sickness, make peace with the pain, make peace with the tiredness, don't try and make it any different. Be content with your body as it is. Don't try and even heal it. Allow it to be. Little by little, sort of then virya comes. It's not the virya of having this enormous energy where you think you can just fight the whole world. It's the energy which abandons unwholesome states. And the unwholesome states of craving are abandoned. You don't need to have this power which most people, like you think you can kick a football for 10 miles, or you can run up and down the hillside just 20 times without getting out of breath. That's not the energy we mean. It's the energy which can abandon unwholesome states, which can maintain good states. So you don't need the physical energy. It's the mental wisdom energy we're talking about here. So which means that you can be old and frail and next to death, you can still have the energy of a Buddha. The great virya which can abandon unwholesome states and give rise to piti and prasadi. So you may be just so weak and not even able to get off your bed, but you can have this beautiful peace and crying with joy. I know that's possible. And when you have that, you know the what virya really means and where it comes from. And what prasadi is, the tranquility of the body, the tranquility of the mind, all coming from this joy of this beautiful Dhamma. In our world, to get sort of happiness, you need so many supports. With Dhamma, you get happiness by letting go of all your supports. In the world, you get contentment by getting everything you want, and it's only a very temporary contentment at that. But here the contentment comes from giving up everything. You abandon the whole lot. And you get tranquility, peace at last. And the joy to realize that this peace, you don't need very much for this peace. This joy is just coming from Dhamma. From remembering the Dhamma, contemplating it, you get this energy and the piti just runs through you. That's why that, you know, even after 30 years as a monk, I'm still inspired by these teachings. You don't get bored the longer you're a monk. Some people once ask that. You know, when you sort of get into jhanas a lot, you get bored with them. After a while, here we go again, more bliss. Of course you don't. Do you get bored with the Dhamma? You know, here we go again, Four Noble Truths. Aditya, the Fire Sermon. How many times have I read that and chanted that in my 30 years as a monk? You don't get bored. You just get more and more inspired. It just builds and builds and builds and builds. This is not worldly happiness. This is the niramisa happiness. Now the unworldly stuff. You just, after a while, you can't get enough Dhamma. And just, you can read it just all day, just for the rest of your life. The same old sutta. It always gives you lots of happiness. The Dhammacakka Sutta, just don't know how many times I've read that and chanted it. It always just inspires me. So beautiful. So what we're saying here is just that this is a piti which you don't get bored of, you don't get inured of. Many happinesses in the world, after a while, they don't turn you on anymore. You get used to them and bored. This is a different type of piti. The piti which comes from wholesome states just grows and grows and grows and is always there for you. And the tranquility which comes as a result. Peace at last. Beautiful, peaceful, blissful tranquility. It's the tranquility of the body and the tranquility of the mind. The tranquility of the body, this kaya prasadi, means you can just sit here. You don't need to move. You don't need to scratch. You don't need to go to the toilet. You don't need a cup of tea or some water. The body is comfortable. And you don't need a healthy body for that. You don't need a young body. You don't need a vigorous body. You just need Dhamma to keep you wise. And when the Dhamma keeps you wise, all these pains and these aches, the so-called weakness, you transcend it. It's just body, that's all. The mind disengages. When the mind disengages from this body, that's the only time this body is still. Now how many times you try and get the perfect posture, how many times you get this cushion or that cushion, get the right heat, the right kuti, it's endless. So after a while you just let go. This is good enough. Even when you're in pain, when you're tired, this is good enough. And the body just disappears. When the body disappears, then it's tranquil, then it's still. All it is, you just disengage from this body. Feelings in the body are just feelings. Sound are just sounds. Taste, whatever else is there, that's all it is. So you completely disengage. Because you're not engaged with it, then the body just calms down. Then it disappears. I remember just teaching this retreat at Singapore, and a few of the, this is in August, a few of the people, they started experiencing their body disappearing, and they got freaked out just because they couldn't feel their hands. And it was quite cute, really. Imagine what happens, I told her, when your whole body disappears. Ah, I want to go home. Because they never experienced that before. They were sort of worldlings. They'd always been so concerned with their body and so attached to it. And they were sitting there and they couldn't feel their hands. And they thought, ah, what's going on? Really quite innocently naive. But the point was, I said, that's great. Now carry on going until the rest of it disappears. And then you know what kaya prasadi is. His body is just so still, and can just sit here for hours, because you're just not paying attention to it anymore. And of course, when you sit for hours, just in kaya prasadi, tranquility of the body doesn't ache afterwards. The more you can let go of the body, just the more the body relaxes, the more those tensions disappear, the more it fixes itself up. So if I don't get kaya prasadi after an hour, I'm stiff. You get kaya prasadi after 4 hours, you're just so loose. That's what happens. This is what tranquility of the body is. And of course you get tranquility of the body, but if you've got a restless mind, the mind is just thinking this way and that way, again, that's not the citta prasadi. But kaya prasadi comes first. And then comes a bit of sukha, a bit of happiness. And that happiness makes the mind still. This is one of those great teachings, is happiness and citta prasadi, they go together, they work together. The more content you are, the more happy you are just being in this moment, the easier it is to have the stillness of the mind. Citta prasadi, prasadi means tranquility, stillness, things being settled, like the water on the lake having no ripples on the surface. How can that happen? This was an old simile of mine, but I remembered it a few days ago. I told it to one of the monks of Anagarikas, I forget which now. Just if you want the ripples on a lake to subside, so you've got this perfectly still lake, the last thing you should do is put your hands in there and try and make it still. You imagine just trying patting down the crests of the ripples. You just make more waves. And that's a very accurate simile to the way that many people meditate. They try and make their mind still. And they just get more restlessness. And they wonder, why can't I get rid of restlessness? Why am I always thinking? Why I can never feel stillness? Because they're putting your hands in. Just do a business again. You are trying to pat down the waves of your mind. And of course, you are making more waves. So even at this point, the memory of the Dhamma and understanding what the Dhamma means, which creates the virya, which is it's not this tough guy business, that's not virya, it's the heroic Buddha energy coming from wisdom. It sees the problem, and from that seeing, the unwholesome Dhammas are just vanquished. You take your hands out, you stop this doing business, you let go. And you're patient enough because your understanding of the Dhamma realizes causes and effects are not immediate, it takes time for those ripples, the past karma, the old karma to subside, for the fire to go out because you haven't put any more fuel in there, for the waves to lose their energies. And that lake, your mind gets so still. Glassy smooth. And that's citta prasadi, the tranquility of the mind, tranquility of the body. Now when you get to these days, this is what meditation is all about. You're sitting there and everything has calmed down, you've got no more business anymore. Now for this time there's no jobs to be done. For this time you can actually say that, you know, what needs to be done has been done, no more doing. In this little moment of prasadi. It's not enlightenment, I'm only taking those words from the enlightenment description. But it's like that because you're not doing anything. And you're so peaceful and so still. And you're not just a hermit outside who lives in the hut just content with pottering around. You're the inner hermit. The inner hermit, the Santa Muni. The quiet, peaceful sage, sitting inside the cave of your heart, of the mind, just tranquil, having cut the ties with the body. And I was looking through my little book, there's this quote which is from the Dhammapada commentary, but it's a very inspiring quote. He said, however much you give up the five senses, to that degree you experience happiness. If you want to experience complete happiness, then you have to give up the five senses completely. I think it was yang yang chajati kamana, tang tang sukang wediati or something. Very lovely quote there. So this is actually, if you want to feel happiness, just give up these five senses in the body. And this is what happens. And when you're feeling this great tranquility, of course, it develops all by itself into samadhi, into the jhanas. This is a great process to be able to experience and to watch. So these beautiful jhanas all come from letting go. They started off with just the Buddha's teachings, and you remember them. Sometimes you don't remember them verbally, it's almost subverbally. The mind remembers them and just does, you know, what the Buddha said. The conditioning works, the program starts to happen. The program of letting go, non-self, program of emptiness, no measuring, program of, you know, this is not me, not mine, doesn't belong to anybody. You know, the whole process of wholesome states just growing, unwholesome ones just completely disappearing, piti coming up, tranquility, the body disappearing, the mind becoming more and more still. And this is what the bodhjhanas are. It just leads into this huge stillness of the jhanas. And those huge stillness of the jhanas, there you've got the sixth factor of the bodhjhanas. Remember, each one of these bodhjhanas is supposed to be founded on what's what we awaken this itang, on seclusion, staying by yourself, keeping company with others. It just gets too distracted. You lose your mindfulness, you lose your investigation of the dharmas, you lose your energy, you lose your tranquility and your piti. But by yourself, stay in your hut alone for long enough, and then these things, they just grow. It's beautiful to experience them. Viraga nisitang. Viraga is a fading away of things. Viraga is sometimes called dispassion, but it also has this other meaning of things disappearing, fading away. So you're fading away, the world is fading away, your past is fading away, your future fading away, even the present moment fading away, consciousness fading away, dua fading away. Just see how many things could just fade away and disappear. All those things are disturbances. The less you have, the more peaceful, the more silent, the freer you feel. The freedom from things rather than the freedom of possessions. You all know that possessions possess you. They're your jailers. They're the torturers. The less you have, the less you have to be tortured about. Your body tortures you, but when you throw it away, you let it go. At least you've got one jailer, one torturer, who's not bothering you anymore. You've got kaya pasadi, you can't feel the body anymore. You go into these deep states of peace. The mind just comes to a beautiful point, just quite naturally, without you wanting to do it. You see this whole process happen, you've got samadhi. Now that really is Chitta Pasadi. Mind is so still it doesn't move for hours. And it's completely blissed out, huge amounts of piti. And that is wholesome. That's kusala. Happened all by itself. All coming from, not from you, from willpower, but from the Dhamma. First two factors of the bodhjhanas. And of course the result of those samadhis. When you come out afterwards, your five hindrances have gone. That's why you can actually really can look upon things. The upeka is not just equanimity. It literally means, like, you know, this word upa and peka to actually to look upon something, to be able to really observe it, to see it properly as it truly is, as they say. Yathābhūta seeing. And it's a seeing without the five hindrances. So there actually you can, from the place beyond jhanas, when jhanas have faded away, when the mind is cleansed and so still. It is going back to that simile of the lake. It's just like you can see right above the lake, and because there's no waves on the surface, there's nothing to distort the light coming from the very depths of that lake. Yet he, as the Buddha I think said in the similes, the lake is so clear, you can see all of the rocks and the pebbles on the bottom. You can see that that thing which you thought was this deep and permanent mind, it's just that, just a body of clear water, just supported by things. Nothing substantial there. The upekā is the ability to see without the five hindrances making you go this way and that way. To be able to see things, not what you want to see, nor to be blind to that which you don't want to see, but to see beyond the power of the five hindrances. To see beyond that which deludes and stops you from becoming enlightened. That which is what creates the insights which lead to enlightenment. Just seeing, upekā, seeing from above this mind, this world, without any waves to distort the truth. And that upekā is the last factor of the bhojangas. All sort of based on this seclusion, which we have in this monastery. So fortunate not to have to do things. You're so fortunate you don't have to stay around for too long. Even those who have the jobs to be done, and even though Michael Upa talks to me, it's only a small amount of the time you stick around. The rest of the time you're free. Free for seclusion. But that seclusion will not work if you don't remember the Dhamma. Keep it firm in the mind. That's why we have these talks to brainwash you, to condition you, so you see in terms of Dhamma, not in terms of the world. You see in terms of forgiveness, not in punishing. See in terms of letting go rather than accumulating. See in terms of selflessness rather than conceit. I'm better, I'm worse, I'm the same. None of that is part of Buddhism. So you don't get down upon yourself, you don't get proud. There's nobody here to be measured. To see in terms of cause and effect, it's not sort of you, it's just this process. To get rid of this will and controller, and do more letting go, see the Four Noble Truths. Let go of the body, doesn't belong to me. Let go of the mind, doesn't belong to you either. Let go of the whole lot. Keep that firmly in the mind. And that was what motivates, powers the path. First of the bhojangas. And from that all these other ones, they just develop quite naturally all by themselves. And in the heart of it, the virya, which many people just misunderstand, don't really truly understand what actually is virya. It's that which abandons the unwholesome states, that which creates the wholesome ones. And you've been doing the virya for a long time. Some of it's sama virya, sometimes it's micha virya, the wrong effort, the wrong sort of energies. You know which ones those are, the ones which comes from the self. That's the wrong energies. You just get stuffed up, frustrated. Those which come from Dhamma, which is just part of the path, those are the ones which lead to the prasadi and piti. So if it's not leading to this joy and tranquility, it's the wrong effort. If it leads to joy and tranquility, you know that's the right effort. Make that your standard. About how much effort, what type of effort should you put into this practice? That which leads to piti and prasadi, that's the amount of effort, that's the type of effort. And a lot of it's just that which is coming from the Dhamma, coming from letting go. And you let go and it's so easy. The tranquility and the joy just come up. And it's so much fun just to sit in your hut and enjoy that. It's there for you. So don't sort of be stupid and forget the Dhamma. Don't lose your mindfulness, your memory and understanding. And the whole rest of the path just follows just seamlessly almost. Samadhi just happens. You see, then it's not you who did it, the Dhamma did it. The mindfulness of the Dhamma, remembering those great teachings of the Buddha, that was what did it, it's not you. So you never get proud. You never think, oh, this is me. At last, I'm the monk who can get jhanas. I'm the monk who does samadhi. It's just the Dhamma's done it. So you give credit to where credit's due. And then upeka just comes up afterwards, just looking. After a jhana, you're just so still. That's why sometimes, even if you haven't got a jhana, you've just got some deep mindfulness, sometimes you just go past a beautiful flower or a bush, and you just get stuck there. You're just looking onto it. What you're doing, you're just looking, that's all. It just fascinates the mind. The mind can just bore into things with its superpower mindfulness. After a jhana, you can just look into that mind. You can see right to its bottom, instead of only just seeing the surface. See right to the bottom of the nature of the mind. Right to the bottom of the nature of this body. And right to the bottom of the nature of samsara. And of course, if you see it to the bottom, it's called parinyaya. Or parinya, sorry. The full knowledge, complete knowledge. Which is the knowledge of the screen winner. And eventually that just becomes the knowledge of the arahat. So this is why this is a bojangles, they lead to enlightenment. This is a path. You're all on that path. So just keep on going. Understand exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And that's why they call the limbs or the wings of enlightenment the Bodhi Angas, which comes to Bojangas. So that's the talk this evening on the seven enlightenment factors and how you're practicing them, I hope.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sāngha.